This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy from Armature, providing software solutions for conformity assessment, standards, and policy management. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Carrie Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions at General Dynamics IT. Good morning, Carrie. How are you?
Good morning, John. I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. I was telling you before the show that we look at the statistics and the analysis of who listens to this program and topics that are interested, and we mail and email it comes in. And, you know, healthcare is always a popular topic for the last two or three years, and we've sliced and diced at everything from mobile health, mHealth, to, electronic records, to everything else. And I thought we want to take and pull out and look at one little aspect of it today, talk about General Dynamics and how they work with CMS and a couple different projects. And maybe some of our listeners can get best practices from you on how to handle large data sets and how to handle sensitive information that has to be protected. But before we delve into this conversation, Carrie, tell us about your background and how you wound up working for General Dynamics IT.
Thanks very much. It's good to be here this morning. So that's a long and circuitous route. First of all, I'm a recovering federal employee. I spent 28 years.
Sounds like a 12-step meeting. I go to 12-step meetings once a week. My name's Carrie.
So I spent 28 years in the federal government, virtually all of it with the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I was a career employee, but at the end of my career, President Bush appointed me to head the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is, a real exciting job, a real difficult job, though. It's one of those jobs that in government that's very tough. So after 28 years, I left the federal government and spent about 6 months of doing nothing, trying to recover from some of that.
Didn't go well with your wife, I'll bet, huh?
She actually went back to work at that point.
My husband's a bum.
So then, one of the things that I was looking to do when I left government was to run a profit and loss in the health IT community, and so a company by the name of Vangent hired me, and I began work in August, September of 2009 with them. We built a robust health business both by organic growth and by acquisition, and then about 18 months ago, General Dynamics Information Technology acquired Vangent. And at that moment, something really exciting happened. And that is, we were able to combine a number of almost stovepipe practices together to build really a very large and very exciting health IT provider. So we are substantial. We're very large. Our main customers are CMS, the military health system, the Food and Drug Administration, and we also have an international component to what we do. So it's been my privilege after 4 years to lead a remarkably good health IT business practice.
It's almost like the right place at the right time. When you look back at 2008, 2009, you see a lot of growth in the area of medical issues and in the federal government, CMS. And so you have the talent that's with Vangent, what might have been subject matter experts, and then some IT expertise, or it two and two is five here. Is that what happened? You had different skill sets combined to really efficiently work?
It really is a remarkable synergy. Both practices, both the General Dynamics Information Technology practice and the Vangent practice, had subject matter experts, but they were able to come together and meld the leadership and the practice together such that we really did get 2 + 2 = 5. It has been a remarkable transformation. A lot of times when a business will look back at an acquisition, sometimes there's a little buyer's remorse. I think in this case, there may be much more celebration than remorse.
That's great. Now, your background, I mean, you're pretty humble. You've been involved in many, many aspects of healthcare IT over the years, and you were one of the first folks to start talking about information technology and healthcare specifically with the American Health Information Community. What is that, and what impact has it had today?
Under President Bush, and in fact, even some of his predecessors, they began to see the value of an electronic health record. And really, one way to think about that is, how do we dispose of the manila folder? You know, these days, and certainly prior, you'd go to a physician's office, and the first thing they'd do is give you a clipboard and a pencil, the same one you'd use the day before and the same one that you'd use the day before that. An electronic health record can capture that information, and in a secure way, make it mobile so that if you have an allergy, for instance, and you're in an automobile accident, that information can be sent to the hospital to which you're headed ahead of you, and you can be appropriately treated. A friend of mine wrote a book called Paper Kills about how all health data can be trapped inside of paper. An electronic health record in a secure way can free that data, improve patient outcomes, and in fact, improve the practice of medicine. That was one of the things that we were dedicated to bringing out. And in fact, the Obama administration, and working with the Congress, has created incentives for physicians and hospitals to adopt them. And that really has been one of the lightning rods of adoption for electronic health records.
Now, it's one thing to be enlightened and understand that EHRs can, in fact, reduce problems and eliminate a lot of costs. But getting the establishment to change, I mean, doctors are pretty notorious for being confident in their skills and confident in their ability. I mean, this almost has to be a prodded. You have to have a carrot in one hand, a stick in the other, and some big guy. I mean, this is a difficult community to move.
It is a difficult community to move. But, you know, let's face it, medicine changes all the time, and the practice of medicine changes all the time. Physicians may be set in their ways, but in their hearts, they are caring people who want to care for their patients in the best ways. And if you can demonstrate, and I think we have, that an electronic health record is one of the best ways to do that, you see adoption pick up pretty rapidly. The real key here, and it's an obstacle that's still ahead of us, but one that we'll get over, is, you know, the holy grail of interoperability, and that is the ability of electronic health records to be able to communicate with one another. The administration has established interoperability standards. We'll get over that. Once we're there, I think we will see the near ubiquity of electronic health records.
And I think that was one of the issues that the American Health Information Community started with, was probably talking about that and discussing, okay, now how are we going to get these systems to work together? I imagine that was one of the, this has been developed a lot of standards based on that.
That's right. One of the things that we wanted to be careful of, and others have been careful of, is to not put the government in the position of choosing winners and losers. Instead, what we attempted to do and what has been done is to bring together a collaboration around standards so that those standards are set with a collaboration with the industry and then certified by the industry. And then, you know, that's the way that you build a community rather than picking and choosing winners and losers.
So what's happened is the federal government's taken a look at this over the years, and they've mandated that, well, now that we have these electronic health records out there, we should be able to take advantage of learning from them and come up with a physician quality reporting system. And that's what CMS has developed in the last few years. And that's where you fit in this puzzle. Is that right?
Yeah. So we support the physician quality reporting system. Under that system, you can report quality measures any number of ways, one of which is through an EHR, one of which is through registries, and the other is on the Medicare claim itself.
So let's slice and dice this. Electronic health record is normally this is patient-based, where it says, well, John had a cold this year and a broken leg last year and a sinus infection 3 years ago, and it kind of follows me. So a registry is something different. Is this a different way to slice and dice this information? Is that what a registry is?
It is. A registry is typically centered around a disease condition, you know, such as diabetes, and really looks to find better therapies, find out which therapies are more effective. The thing about registries is you have to be very, very rigorous about the way that the data go in. There have been several studies that show many times there's not that rigor around it, and so the output isn't quite as reliable as it might be. That same caveat goes to claims and to electronic health records. As we used to say in the old days of computer programming, and it's still true, garbage in, garbage out.
So the idea here is that, let's say I'm in Chicago, and I walk in the door and I present with diabetes, and what can happen is that this information can be collected, and the PQRS can be examined by individuals with analytical skills and find out what best practices are and evaluate physicians or perhaps hospitals or situations and say, well, this is a mortality rate in this county, and this is a morbidity rate in this county, and this is how we can compare them, and that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to take advantage of the information that registries and EHRs provide in order to draw conclusions for saving money and for improving care.
And there's also another purpose, and that is if you set aside all of the shouting and yelling about healthcare reform, and I don't care what country you're in, it's the same thing. There's one universal constant and one thing that everybody can agree on, and that is we need to quit buying healthcare by the yard and instead pay for quality. The PQRS system is a way of paying for quality.
We're talking about physician quality reporting systems and medical records and making a transition in IT here. Let's take a break and come back, talk more. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Carrie Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we're talking to Carrie Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology. And we're talking about making huge, big transitions and changes in healthcare IT and data. And Carrie worked at CMS for a while. Now he's working with General Dynamics and help develop this physician quality reporting system. Now, one problem with this type of data is, if I owned a company called Joe's Donuts, I mean, who cares about this data? It doesn't make any difference at all. This is medical data, so this has to be handled very, very carefully. And there's all kinds of requirements about collecting that and handling it, and all of a sudden you have the CMS involved and you're involved. So what kind of best practices can you have for my listeners that may glean some information for how you made this transition and how careful do you have to be with this information?
You have to be extraordinarily careful. It's one of those things that we build into our DNA. So just to give you some idea of what General Dynamics Information Technology does in terms of personal data, it's in many ways it's really remarkable. For instance, we process every student loan, every student aid application in the country. We process and have that information. We have every Medicare claim since 1999, and that's some 257 billion records. So when you talk big data, we've been doing big data for a long time. We did half of the United States census. The amount of data that we manage for the government is absolutely tremendous, and this is something that we take very, very seriously. It's part of the indoctrination process for our employees as they come in. We build safeguards into the workplace so that the data don't leave. We go well beyond the laws and regulations for what we have to do, because you don't get two chances at losing personal health information. So we take this very seriously.
So you have petabytes of records, all kinds of information sitting over there. Now we have initiatives from the federal government where you have to open up data so people can mine it, and each agency has to come up with a certain number of programs that are open. I mean, how do you work with that, and what kind of policies do you use, and what kind of, is there information that's just generic information, patient A, patient B, this blood level, or how do you really, or is that part of your concern at all?
Well, we of course do what our customer wants. And in some cases, the data are available. So I mentioned the claims database that we had. About 3 years ago, working through CMS and with our staff, the Wall Street Journal produced a remarkable series of articles on the data that we house that showed things like drift in practices that are being driven by reimbursement, fraud, abuse, those kinds of things, which, you know, the data were made available under very tight circumstances to the Wall Street Journal, and they were able to pull that out. More and more, those data will become available beyond researchers, beyond others, but we have to be extraordinarily careful to make sure that they're de-identified and that no individual person can be identified as part of letting those records go. It is a tremendous trove of information. Other agencies have it, and the step that we make more and more to open government will only benefit us.
I keep thinking of years ago when I learned about clinical trials and clinical studies with pharmacies and how they do this over a long period of time, and they have to be careful with that information as well. Is that where a lot of this originated, or am I just confusing the issues here?
Well, actually, what you mentioned is now an opportunity. So one of the things that you can do with big data are essentially virtual clinical trials, where you can take a group of people that have had an intervention, a specific treatment, and another group who look exactly like them and see if the intervention worked. Now, is that a scientific conclusion? Absolutely not. But what it does is it gives you the roadmap or ways that the scientific conclusion can be reached. If it shows that, for instance, that therapy is not effective and you're using very, very large data sets, you can be reasonably certain that that's true, and you can have somebody go do the research, get the science right, and do it in a way so that you're picking and choosing the therapies that A, may be doing harm, or B, are just particularly are wasteful.
Over the years, through years in the federal government, you've seen moves and generations. We've seen move to the cloud. We've seen Stephen Royko with Shared First. DISA has got a big cloud we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks here. So is your solution a cloud-based solution? Is it a hybrid solution? Is it an on-premises solution? What kind of solution would you classify it as?
It is a cloud-based solution. It is in a highly virtualized environment. Most of it is in our data center in Warrenton, Virginia. But you know, when you talk cloud and the transition to cloud, one of the things that I think of and the way that the government moves, is when I started in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the very early 80s, the cloud in the office was the cigarette that your coworker was smoking.
I'll have to try that one.
Next to you in the office. When I started, we didn't have PCs on our desk. Instead, we had ashtrays, and you know, slowly that cloud has moved out. But one of the things about cloud and some of the other buzzwords, you got to remember that for many things in the IT world, your customer just wants it to work. It's like turning on a light switch. Most people don't care if the electricity was generated by coal, by nuclear, by wind. They want the lights to work. That's what our customers want from us. If the cloud-based solution is best, that's what we'll do. If it is a highly virtualized hybrid cloud, we'll do that. They want the lights to come on. That's what we want to do for them.
And I think putting this in perspective, what we're trying to do here is reduce cost, improve care to people who are getting health care from the federal government. And, you know, I'm trying to tie this into some specific IT type topics, like, you know, when I grew up, a registry was something that you played around with in the Windows. Okay, that's what you do in the registry. And I learned about indexes and now different types of registries. So you got an index, you got a registry, electronic health record, all different types of information that you have to very carefully store and sort, and now not only keep it secure, but selectively make it available in open data sets. And so is there a difference in changing definitions here, or is there certain information you can release, you can't release? I mean, what guidelines do you have for that?
So, of course, you know, the statutes guide us on what we can and can't, and then, you know, what the customer wants from there is next. And in one or two cases, there are even court orders preventing the release of some information. So to call it a minefield, that's not exactly right. It's something that you just have to be careful of. The move to making more and more data available, regardless of its form, is something that, again, will truly benefit our society. The hard bit is going to be making use of that data once it leaves. What does it mean? It was stored and gathered for a particular purpose. Can it be used for another purpose? Can you take very heterogeneous data sets, run them together using, you know, Hadoop or one of the other big data frameworks, and reach really interesting conclusions? My answer to that is yes. I still think we're at the threshold of really doing that.
We come back, talk more about maybe big data and some techniques to use to handle large data sets. And maybe talking about mobile devices. I think this is an intriguing concept with generated information. And there's some sensors generating medical information. Just all this information being dumped at you and trying to figure out and coordinate it and try to have make some sense, have some value of it. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Kerry Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Kerry Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology. I teach a class, and a lot of my students get their information from blogs and from Twitter feed and from texting and from other students. And no one watches TV anymore. It's like, what's a TV? That's for like Redskins games, I guess. And I'll write a blog about this, and you can find my blog by going to Google, type in John Gilroy blog. Do you have a blog? Is there a blog that you read, Kerry, or anything that might provide information for my listeners?
At the risk of sounding like a Luddite, no to both questions. Mm-hmm. I don't have one.
Yeah.
And I really don't read one in particular. I'll come across one from time to time, but really not one in particular. I understand the need to communicate, and you know, blogs, Twitter feeds, things like that are good. But I also like having hard validated data,
yep,
as well. And you know, I look at those things as part of a conversation, not really part of a way that I want to ingest a lot of data that I'm going to take action on.
Well, Kerry, you live in a very, very hard world, and if mistakes are made, it's your head.
Right.
And so I can understand why you want to be very careful with what you say and how things are said and information, because you know there are lives that are in balance here, and I think you got to be serious. When I have people from the Pentagon over, we drop the tenor to a lot more serious than kind of a light conversation. We're kind of in the mix here, kind of in the middle, not too serious, not too light, but this is important information. This is people's health information that if released can cause all kinds of troubles. When you pick up a magazine, I actually read paper magazines, Network World, I was reading one yesterday, talked about mobile devices. Somebody knows there's a lot of mobile devices out there. What they're telling me is that the average U.S. subscriber today has 1.57 mobile devices. So everyone's got a smartphone and a tablet and maybe some kind of a book reader, and their kids have got smartphones and they've got smartphones, and there's multiple ones sitting around the house. And so if we look at a healthcare establishment like a hospital, well, it's going to be doctors with smartphones. And oh, by the way, there's medical sensors out there, and there's just all kinds of information being generated. I would think this has got to be, now you're at the other end of that collecting all this data. I mean, you've got to get a bigger boat or something. I mean, this has got to be difficult for you.
So mobile represents, I think, a real, real opportunity, both in terms of being able to bring in, you know, large, big data sets to be able to tell something about population health. But moreover, I mean, if you think about, so why are people suddenly so interested in health? Why is your show on health IT, you know, more popular than perhaps other subjects? And the reason is, health is personal. It is about you. So what is a mobile device? Many people, mobile devices, I think there's even a pathological name for losing it, that it becomes a part of them. One of the things that a mobile device can do is help you manage your own health. Think of Fitbit. That's what Fitbit does. It manages your exercise routine. Others do that. There are, now apps, for instance, which claim that if you can hold them up to your face and head, they can detect the early signs of melanoma. Well, not with complete accuracy. But think about it. Why would you want that? It's because you care about your own health. The mobile device can become the instrumentality by which you can better manage your health. Now, the real kicker here is, all right, it's a mobile device. Is it a medical device? Has it been approved by the FDA? Et cetera, et cetera.
And so what about the information that's on there? Who owns it and how secure you have to be with it? Yeah.
That's right. So mobile represents an incredible frontier, not just in terms of bringing in data and understanding what it means, but moreover in the personalization of health and being able to manage your own health better. We at the at my company have built some mobile applications for people to for one of our customers in the military, for them and their families to better manage and get help for instance, traumatic brain injury. That's one of the things where you need to really wrap your arms around people to make sure they get the kind of treatment and the consistent treatment that they need. That's just one example of the use of a mobile device, whether it's a smartphone, an iPad, or any other means of being able to communicate in that way.
So we have physicians working in hospitals who are generating information maybe on smartphones or tablets or pieces of paper, and their assistants are putting it in. So it filters down to you. But there's got to be a way to encourage the use of electronic medical records, and that's what CMS is doing with incentive payments and penalties. Do you want to talk about those and how to motivate people, or you just want to avoid? This is going to be a hot topic here. I don't know if you want to talk about that or not.
So we've talked about that a bit. The way that the evolution of electronic health records from being in a fairly nascent stage to the work that was done three or four years ago to begin building standards. Now to the work that's being done to encourage it by giving real money to physician practices and to hospitals for the adoption and use of electronic health records. Now, one of the things that was very important in the High Tech Act and something that really was critical to its success is meaningful use. So you didn't just have to buy the system, because people would have bought them and
keep them on the shelf. Yeah.
Or it would become a remarkably expensive scheduling system. You had to use it, and you had to use it in a particular way. And meaningful use is one of the things that's driving toward what I've called the holy grail of electronic health records. That's interoperability, the ability for them to talk and exchange information in a private and secure way that improves your health and mobilizes your data in the way that you want it.
So what's happening in 2013, 2014, there are incentives to have physicians do this. And in 2015 and 2016, there's going to be, guess what, penalties if they don't do that. So it's strong encouragement, I would think.
Yes, it is. And now that's for the PQRS system. That's for physicians reporting quality measures. They can do that through an EHR, through a registry, or through a claim. And again, that's something that physicians have adopted. I don't know, there's some 700,000 physicians in the country today. Originally, only about 10 or 15% participated. Participation is way, way up these days. And one of the things that it does is it gives us insight into the practices of physicians and the way that they better manage their patient population. And it moves us closer to paying for quality. PQRS is not quite paying for quality. It's paying for reporting. The next step will be to pay for quality.
Because there's such a variation in care, and a physician who operates in a community clinic may have one percentage of mortality or morbidity, but if they're in a wealthier area, it could be different. Are they better physicians, worse physicians? But hopefully the data that's recorded here will help someone evaluate that in the future.
So one of the things that we do is the risk and case mix adjustment that measures exactly that. So one of the things that you will hear physicians say is, well, the outcomes are bad because I have a sicker population. Well, we can validate that or not and do appropriate risk adjustment to say whether or not, in fact, they had a worse case mix or not. But again, that is something that can be done. Risk adjustment and case mix adjustment is a well-known science.
When I think of that term meaningful use, I scramble at my brain and go, no, what you're trying to do is you're trying to come up with meaningful information. and that's what the use is fine, but the meaningful information is what's sitting here and has to be pulled out. And I think that's the transition I'm looking at when I delve more and more deeply into this whole system.
That's right. If all we've done with electronic health records is replace our steel file cabinets for electronic ones, then we haven't done much. Really, mobilizing that data, freeing that data is the thing that's going to make a difference, both in terms of individual care and population care.
You probably read the press reports here in May where high-level government officials are talking about the percentage of doctors who have received Medicare and Medicaid incentive payments. It's almost like half of the 700,000, it's like 280,000, 300,000 doctors are making this transition. It sounds like what was started 3 or 4 years ago, the uphill battle is getting almost to the top of the crest of the hill, isn't it?
I think it is. I think we're gonna reach that inflection point here soon. Still a couple more things to do on interoperability and the way that information gets exchanged over a network. And then at that point, I think we really will reach the point where you can expect to walk into a physician's office, sign in on a kiosk, and walk into a paperless environment.
That's a dream for many. We come back, we'll talk more about physician quality reporting system and medical devices and gathering information in a secure format and having to release it, too, under some of the new guidance from the administration about open data. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Kerry Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, Kerry Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technology, talking about handling large data sets, handling big data, information that's transmitted from physicians and hospitals into CMS, and what General Dynamics does is it helps CMS in organizing and storing this information and carefully releasing it. It's almost like a dam releasing information because you have to be legal requirements of what you can release and can't release, especially with all this open data and open government and everything else. There are listeners who get information on Twitter about a wide range of topics. If you want to follow me, you can follow me at Ray Gilray. And Kerry, do you have a Twitter account? Are you following on Twitter?
I don't have a Twitter account. If somebody wanted to follow me, they'd have to do it in the old-fashioned way.
In the car.
and I think there are laws against that.
Yeah, stalker rules, huh? Well, listeners of mine use blogs and Twitter and handheld devices and smartphones and everything else. And they're listening. They're going, that Kerry, all those years in the government. Now, what kind of smartphone he has? What kind of a computer does he have? When did he get his first computer? And so I put together this little test called the Nerdometer test to find out if you're a card-carrying nerd or not. So I'm going to ask these 10 questions and pull back the curtain and get all kinds of information about you.
Okay.
So, when did you get your first personal computer?
I think our first PC was about 1988.
88, that's pretty respectable. And when did you get your first cell phone?
Cell phone would have been right around the same time, 88 or 90.
Now, that was early, so you get points for that. That's that's a lot earlier than 88.
Yeah, weighed about as much as a Volkswagen.
That's the bad news. Do you use any online personal backup services?
No, I back it up myself with a nice terabyte of data that I have.
Ten years ago, I would have committed you to the hospital if you'd say that. Yeah, I got a terabyte at home, and I just back it up there. What kind of smartphone do you have?
I have an Android.
And number of apps on that?
Oh, several dozen.
Dozen? Now, here's a question that's just changed. How many tablet devices do you have floating around your house, or how many do you personally have?
Well, I personally have one floating around my house. It depends on how many of my adult children are home at the time, but each
tons.
One of them has at least one.
See, that's the key. At least one is the new answer. It just amazes me, because you may be watching the basketball game on TV and watching a smartphone for tweets and the tablet for looking up statistics on, let's say, LeBron James. That's what some people do. Active in social networking sites, any of them?
No, I do have a Facebook account, but that turned out to be a very good way of communicating with my children when they were overseas. My son was in the Peace Corps.
That's great, yeah.
And so we could communicate that way. And also through the pictures, he was able to give us some idea of his living conditions, what it was like there. The same with my daughter who taught English in Chile.
Oh, that's great. And the last book read, was it electronic or paper?
Well, so that requires a little parsing, because for really important books, ones that I really want to absorb, like Robert Caro's Ascent to Power, which is the last one of the Lyndon Johnson
number
series.
Number three.
You really want the book, and you want to feel it, and you want to hold it. Same with Kevin Power's meditation on the Iraq War called Yellow Birds. Same thing. Now, for travel and for light reading, I use my iPad, and you know, for there, the most recent thing would be Mira Grant's really excellent zombie trilogy.
You do have a degree in philosophy, don't you?
Yes,
I interesting?
Do.
Wow, it's amazing. You know, when I saw Brian Lamb interview Caro on Q&A, and he talked about the detail he went into with that biography, I've read the first two. I'm almost scared to read that third one, because he really took his time with that one, and so many interesting things are going on. I think maybe I'm a week at the beach, I'll dive into that, because it's got to be like quicksand.
It really is extraordinary, and two things stand out in particular. One was the wheeling and dealing at the convention where Lyndon Johnson became vice president.
That's the interesting part of it.
Very, very good. And then the transition of power right after the Kennedy assassination, and how Johnson had to seize power, but at the same time had to be respectful of Kennedy's widow and the family and the mourning and all that, and the very delicate balance there. Caro does an outstanding job of covering that.
Yeah, I read all his previous books too. Kind of fascinating. Instead of going back in time, let's go back to the future, talk about the next 5 or 10 years. I think very few people could have predicted the number of tablets people have, the amount of information that's coming in, medical sensors. I mean, the word petabyte still shocks me. I guess I'm going to have to get used to the word yodabyte and zettabyte and all these new types of bytes coming in. So what's going to happen in the next 5 to 10 years? You've seen the past. Is it going to be doctors with Google Glass and immediately going into the PQRS and every step they make? Or what's going to happen here, Carrie?
So
any ideas?
I think what we're going to continue to see is device convergence. Is, you know, we've seen that with smartphones. We're going to continue to see that, so that more and more of your life can be managed through whatever device you're carrying. Now, will that be Google Glass or some variant? Perhaps. You know, that hasn't been market tested, but there will be more and more personalization of the device, more and more convergence of the device, where, you know, whether it actually becomes an appendage to you, or you know, you're able to use your phone through, bone induction in your jaw and have the phone inserted in your mandible. I don't know. But we will continue to see the convergence. The other thing that we will see is all of the data that we generate in our lives becoming more and more accessible, and, if we're very lucky, more and more useful to us and to others. That certainly is going to be true of health data. In health data really lies the key to better managing our health system and managing our own health. And that is using the therapies that work, dispensing with those that don't, the right person taking the correct medication and being compliant with that medication, the way that you can manage your own health so that you don't become ill. All of those things are going to be wrapped into the device that you carry.
Back in the paper-based days of medical files and looking at your chart on a piece of paper, it was very difficult to find out what a doctor was charging in Boston, what a doctor was charging in Tulsa. But now with transparency with some of these charges, all of a sudden we get a better idea. And here in May of 2013, we see a report coming out where different variation in medical charges are out there. I think this is going to happen more and more in the future with selective release of information that's allowed to legally be released. And transparency can help improve care and reduce costs too, can't it?
So here's what will happen is you get that kind of variation in payment because there's no link between the payment and the value of the thing. That's the only way that economic model works. When you know the quality, when you know the value, and that's what we measure at General Dynamics Information Technology, then you can establish a price. And with price transparency, that creates the linkage that the health system needs between the value of the health that you receive, the health care that you receive, and the price that you pay.
Remember BASF, you talk about, we don't make things, we make things better. Right. Maybe General, maybe the folks at General Dynamics would say, well, we get this information, but now we can make it meaningful and transparent and put work boots on all these petabytes of information. And you're exactly right. What good is moving a petabyte of information from a steel case file drawer into a server sitting somewhere in Canada if it doesn't have value to someone? It's just repainting a car.
We are the big link in the value chain.
Any projects you're going to try to get involved in the future that you want to maybe grab onto or something you find especially intriguing?
We'll just do a little tease here. We have an exciting one that we'll be announcing probably in the next couple of weeks in the United Kingdom.
Well, isn't that interesting? We'll have all eyes on the UK, and I imagine the same kind of problem there with transparency.
Absolutely.
And physician charges and what to release, what not to release. I mean, this is not just the United States. It's all countries, and maybe some of the third world countries will have a leg up because they haven't had to worry about they didn't have paper. You know,
right.
Some countries in sub-Saharan Africa that the ants would eat all the paper, so they didn't have a paper-based culture at all. We're going to take a break here and close up our interview with Kerry Weems. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Our guest today was Kerry Weems, Vice President and General Manager for Health Solutions, General Dynamics Information Technologies. Thank you, Kerry.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.